This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. On today's Noon Business Hour, Amazon moving deeper into the grocery business, not just with Whole Foods. Dean Foods, a longtime staple in Chicagoland, is up for sale. And there's a bankruptcy going on as well involving Dean Foods. We'll cover that in our next segment. Fear of recession weighed on the minds of investors earlier this year. Now, as the markets hit new highs, it's been largely replaced by a fear of missing out. Let's talk about the psychology of investing. Mark Hulbert is joining us, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. He's based in Washington, D.C. Mark, tell us about this psychological phenomenon. Sometimes people want to make sure they're safe, and other times they want to make sure they can win.
Yeah, it's been forever thus. The markets go back and forth on a pendulum swing between fear and greed. And it's amazing, actually, how quickly that pendulum swing has now started to swing. I don't think if you go back 20, 30 years ago that it swung as rapidly as it has in recent years. Just remember, at the end of last year, you may recall, the stock market was down over 20%, which met the semi-official definition of a bear market, and people were running scared. And sure enough, the market took off from that point of maximum fear. Now, unfortunately, for the market at least, we're at the other end of that sentiment swing. And now we are, you know, thinking the market's only going to go up. And I'm afraid that is not the sentiment conditions that's conducive to anywhere near the kind of return that we've seen so far this year.
And of course, the problem, it sounds like what you're talking about there is moving on the sentiment instead of actually looking at the data.
Well, that's right. So let's say, depending on which market average you look at, the market's up 25% since New Year's. Is corporate America worth 25% more now than it was then? No, I don't think anyone would really claim that it was. Then you might say, well, of course, it's because the market didn't deserve to go down 20% over the last 3 months of last year. And so you can argue both ways of that. But you're right. People are reacting on sentiment than they are on fundamentals. And if they were to look at fundamentals, I think they would be doing perhaps just the opposite of the way the market is going. Warren Buffett, the famous CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, has a great line, which is that our job is to be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And I'm afraid it's the former that we should be doing right now.
Yeah, it's that sort of we have you on to talk about this all the time, that contrarian viewpoint. Don't run to a place where everyone else is running.
Well, that's right. There's a famous saying on Wall Street that the market likes to climb a wall of worry. And we had a wall of worry in spades back at the beginning of the year. Now we have just the opposite, what contrarians will call a slope of hope. And that hope is usually conducive to, as a slope would indicate, a downward trend rather than an upward one.
So as we're looking at a market that has been fairly stabilized here, no really kind of wacky movements here, what should we do? How should we look at it as investors?
Well, that's a great question. It really depends on what kind of investor you are. If you're a long-term investor, investing for your retirement and aren't going to be touching your retirement for many years hence, you probably should do nothing. You should still be invested to a substantial degree in equities and not reacting at every little squiggle along the way. But most of the people who are following the market on a day-to-day basis are really more traders than they are investors. And there, I don't know whether you would trade in or out of the market on a daily or weekly basis on the basis of sentiment, but you can still take advantage of it. If you have some money that's on the sidelines, you'd wait until there's a lot less bullish sentiment out there to put that money in. And by the same token, if you have some money you need to pull out of the market, you might wait until you have a sentiment condition like right now. And I think that would suggest that other things being equal, you might want to take some money off the table right now if you're a short-term trader.
Yeah, hang on to it and make it work later. Thanks so much. Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Dean Foods was founded in 1925, and it's been a Chicago-area institution for decades. A 2001 merger with a Dallas company, but now it's filing for bankruptcy protection. Let's learn what the future may hold for the company. Catherine Doherty is a reporter at Bloomberg in New York joining us. Catherine, just kind of give us the nuts and bolts of what you know about this bankruptcy.
Yeah, so the company filed for bankruptcy this morning. It's dealing with liabilities that top over $1 billion, and that includes both its pension liabilities as well as payments to bondholders. So the company has been bleeding cash. It has faced some pressure from competitors as well as just a changing consumer habit base, where more folks are switching to water and other beverages, and the entire industry is seeing a lot of this pressure and loss. But particularly for Dean, with all of its liabilities, it needed to file in order to both clean up its balance sheet and also start a sale process, which will be underway as soon as the court schedules some of the hearings.
I'm probably oversimplifying this, so tell me if I am. If you're a milk producer and not as many people are buying it, or they're not buying as much, it's probably not just as simple as not producing as much milk in order to stay profitable, right?
Right. I mean, you need to keep up sales in order to pay for or pay your vendors. You need to be able to keep up with your plants, and pay your employees as well. And again, the pension liabilities, that was over $700 million. So they were running out of cash in order to keep those current.
So as far as the consumer is concerned, any sort of an impact from a bankruptcy like this? I mean, milk is still going to be in the stores, right?
Yes, exactly. No, a lot of folks misinterpret bankruptcy as the company vanishing or going away. That is not the case. In fact, this bankruptcy process, as I had mentioned earlier, is going to be what could be a sale to Dairy Farmers of America, which is one of the largest national, not just U.S. Producers. So they have been in discussions with Dean Foods about purchasing the company's assets, whether it will be all of the assets or just parts of the company, that remains to be seen. And that formal process will be in court, so they will need the bankruptcy judge's approval in order for any transaction to go forward.
If there is a complete sale, you know, if it's not just selling off parts, it seems like getting rid of some of that debt would make Dean much more attractive.
Yeah, that could be. The liabilities, so you have your debt holders, and a sale, you would pay both the debt holders, but you also have to deal with these pension liabilities. And they're almost equal at this point. So there needs to be enough value that all of these liabilities get dealt with. And the debt holders are actually on an equal playing field to the pension liabilities. So it remains to be seen how much this company ends up selling for and whether or not they have enough money to pay both the debt holders and their pension liabilities as well.
Really good information. Thanks for bringing us up to date. Catherine Doherty, a reporter at Bloomberg based in New York, talking about Dean Foods filing for bankruptcy. Up next, Amazon is looking to expand its presence in the grocery business, and this is not just with Whole Foods.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Amazon plans to open its first new brand of grocery store. They'll do it in California next year. Let's learn more about the online giant's future food plans. Phil Lempert is joining us. Phil is founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, good to have you with us as always. What is Amazon planning on doing here?
Well, Cisco, what's so interesting is the Wall Street Journal back in March reported that they'd been signing leases around the country. Los Angeles, as you pointed out, Woodland Hills, which is about a half hour away from me, as well as Philadelphia and some other cities. What they want to do is they want to have traditional conventional supermarkets in addition to Whole Food stores. Now, nobody knows what it's going to be called, but if it's called simply Amazon, it would reinforce their low price strategy and go head to head with retailers like Kroger and Albertsons. The other rumor that's going on is that they are looking to buy smaller chains, because to build a chain from scratch will take years, but to go out there and find the second, third, fourth generation chains of six to, let's say, 15 stores might be a huge opportunity for them.
So now, just to emphasize this, they have Whole Foods already. This is a different thing.
Yes, it is totally different. And in fact, I met with a contractor who off the record shared with me, he's actually been in this store that's going through a remodel right now. It was either a Best Buy or a Toys R Us, I'm not quite sure. And he was saying to me, and he said, never repeat this, but for Sysco, of course I'm going to repeat it. Bottom line is, it looks like it's going to be a lot of prepared foods, conventional store, but in addition to just having food, I think we can expect some other Amazon products there as well that are non-food oriented.
So it's really fascinating, and I'm glad you're cluing us in on this, by the way. Fascinating that there's really no way for them to shift Whole Foods away from the belief that, I mean, everyone thinks Whole Foods is kind of the top shelf, more expensive stuff. And so this is Amazon saying, hey, we're going to go ahead and compete in the cheaper grocery sphere, too.
Exactly. You know, Amazon wants to sell everybody everything, whether you're making, you know, $200,000 a year or whether you're making $25,000 a year. And this really just reinforces that strategy that Amazon has whatever you want. The Whole Foods shopper is going to pay that extra, but you're not going to get new people to come, as we've seen, even when they give a 5% discount. If you're a member, even if you buy their credit card or use their credit card, which is another 5% off. This really appeals to a much more mass market, as I said, going head-to-head with the Jewel, the Albertsons of the world, those kind of chains.
Yeah, really interesting. Amazon pretty much getting into everything. Thank you so much. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, another entry into the ultra-low airfare market.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Trump and Fed Chairman Jerome Powell will both be speaking about the economy this week. Their remarks could impact the markets. Another air carrier is getting in on the ultra-low-cost, no-frills action. We'll find out more in Travel Tuesday. A suburban high school has recorded its 35th case of whooping cough this year. The Supreme Court's conservative majority seems prepared to allow the Trump administration to end a program protecting immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally as children. On Wall Street, the Dow up 28, NASDAQ up 35, and the S&P is up 9 points. Oil is up a third of a percent. We're going to have a cold day all day long in spite of the sunshine. Right now, it's 14 degrees in Chicagoland, heading to a high of 20. Wind chill makes it feel like just 4 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are gaining ground today, just barely. Let's get some analysis now. Brian Battle is joining us, director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and an advisor at PT Asset Management here in Chicago. Brian, as you're looking around Wall Street today, what do you make of what you're seeing?
Yeah, Cisco, another pretty good day in the market. You know, year to date, the S&P is up 23%, but in the past 12 months, it's up 13%. You remember we had a disaster at the end of 2018, so the markets are doing well, and it's driven by a couple of things. The first is that we've gotten through earnings season, which turned out okay. Businesses, you know, had okay results. They were better than expected, so now we've pivoted to looking towards the future. And so the S&P reached a record, surpassing 3,100 for the first time today. Right now we're at 3,097, so we're just a little bit below the record. And we're watching a couple of things. President Trump just finished his remarks, and he took credit for a lot of the economy, for cutting taxes and cutting regulations. So really we're waiting for the next thing, which is probably, as you described, the Fed and some talk on trades and tariffs.
And notice we've not been seeing the significant volatility that we were seeing there for a while. Is that because a lot of investors are taking a wait and see approach?
I think that's right. We've had a nice we've had a nice run, and the market's going to seem to be grinding higher in the absence of bad news. There really hasn't been bad news. The trade deal with China, which is the one thing that's really hanging over everyone's head, seems like we're heading to some sort of, they're calling it phase one, where we have some sort of preliminary agreement with China, get some of the tariffs taken out, and then move on to the next round. So that seems to be coming. The president, during his speech today, said, you know, that something could happen soon. which makes us all feel better. The only other thing that's hanging over our, that used to be hanging over our head was higher interest rates, and the Federal Reserve is lowering interest rates. That we had a meeting a week ago where the Fed said they were cutting rates, but it seems like they are not going to cut rates in December. So the Fed is off the table. Rates are really, really low. There's really no inflation, and the economy is doing okay. The thing that'll give us a next leg up, it seems like, is once we get an announcement on a trade deal with China.
So is this Goldilocks? I mean, you don't want the market to really be surging forward. You don't want it to be collapsing. You sort of want maybe a little steady growth.
Yeah, we're right there. Cisco, we have, you know, pretty good news. We're waiting. There's no bad news, really. And we're getting here at the end of the year. So there's going to be some position rebalancing. I think, you know, at the end of the year, everyone should be looking at their personal finances and making, you know, it's benefit election time. So make sure your 401k is taking advantage of your match, making sure if your company has an HSA, you're taking advantage of any match there. And so people really balance their portfolios. Everybody doesn't want to miss out on the stock market rally. So everybody's really just automatically, seemingly investing into index funds and just trying to be part of the stock market. So in the absence of bad news, it seems like we're just going to drift higher. And it seems like the only thing on the horizon is possibly good news. There's only a trade deal with China. Certainly, there was no talk today about a European trade tariff deal, which we were kind of expecting but didn't get. And so you're right. It seems like Goldilocks, we're in great shape, and we're just there doesn't seem to be a lot of fear of bad news, so we're just going to drift higher.
You touched on the earnings season. How important was, obviously you want to see the quarterly results, but how important also is what companies were saying about what they expect next quarter?
That's right. The two things you get from earnings season is how we did last quarter and then how do things look going forward. And so typically the businesses and analysts will sort of hedge their bets and they'll underestimate results. So most companies beat the expectations and the outlooks weren't as dire as people thought. The economic statistics are mixed. They're not as bad as anyone would think. And the idea that there's this recession looming in the shadows there somewhere is probably unfounded because we have about 2% growth. If you look at the Federal Reserve's projections, they think we'll have about 2% growth. So it seems like we're going to muddle along until we get some break here. Unfortunately for us, we will probably not get any fiscal relief because it doesn't look like Congress is going to get anything done on taxes, trade, or regulation. They're busy doing political things. So unfortunately, not a lot of leadership out of D.C., so it's going to have to come solely from the efforts in the private sector.
And do investors really like that political season where it seems like often Congress not doing anything is better?
Yeah. Well, it's for do no harm, right? If they're not there, they can't do anything, make anything worse. And if they're not doing anything, they can't make it worse. So that's a little bit of a jaded position. If we had a Congress that was pro-growth, you can be pro-environment and pro-economy and still be growing the economy. It isn't a trade-off of growth or no growth. You can have smart growth and less regulation that doesn't hurt anybody. So we're in that part of time where it doesn't seem like anything is going to get done at D.C. other than everyone's going to be angling for the results of the re-election. So all the progress is going to have to come from the private sector because regulation, the two things the Trump administration did was they cut corporate taxes for sure, but they've also diminished the regulatory burden, which might be even more important than the tax burden. And the regulatory burden isn't, it's a free-for-all, laissez-faire. There's a lot of regulations that prohibited business formation and growth, and those are starting to get unwound, and we've benefited from those in the stock market. It's certainly benefited from those for the past 2.5 years.
Always good insight. Thank you, Brian Battle. He's a director at Performance Trust Capital Partners, advisor at PT Asset Management. Up next, Travel Tuesday, an update on the battle to attract customers looking for the lowest available airfare.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Hamilton County Tourism. JetBlue is the latest carrier to enter the ultra-low-cost airfare market. Let's discuss no-frills flight options with Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher at joesentme.com, based in New York. Joe, good to have you with us. What is JetBlue doing?
Well, hello, Cisco, and it's 30 degrees warmer in New York, so for those of you people flying to New York...
Really? You have to rub it in? Really, Joe? Really?
No, take a layer off, that's all, I mean, when you get here. As for JetBlue, which is, of course, headquartered in New York, what they're calling their Blue Basic Fare looks very much like United, American, Delta, and the others, which means you're restricted on seat assignments. You're going to have to pay for that. There's no such thing as a free assignment where you choose the seat. You'll be the last person to board. The fare you buy cannot be changed or refunded. The one small advantage that JetBlue is offering is that they will allow you to take the normal amount of carry-ons, which would be one carry-on item and one thing called the personal item. United does not even allow that in their version. You are restricted just to that personal item on a carry-on.
Yeah, and American changed, didn't they? Didn't they go back to that? Because they were having a bunch of problems at the gate with people thinking they could bring it on and not being able to. It was just kind of tying it up.
Exactly. This is a very difficult fare to execute, Cisco, for the airlines. Their goal here was originally to fight the spirits and the frontiers. When Delta Airlines did this several years ago, that was the goal. There's a secondary goal now, however, that is much less talked about, which is it's also a way to force the business traveler to pay more, because most corporations do not want their travelers buying this basic economy fare. So it's a way to keep the cheapest fares away from business travelers who they think will pay more. As for the rest of people, just remember your fare is not all inclusive anymore. You're going to pay for seat assignment. You're going to pay for check bags, for boarding position if you don't want to be the last person on the plane. So again, look at the total price you're paying, not just the quote unquote fare, whether it's basic economy or regular economy.
Yeah, you know, I sort of feel like the gas stations now, where you're driving along and you see the price, and then in fine print it says with car wash. It sort of feels that way now when I go online to buy an airfare. You see that first price, but really ignore that unless all you care about is the seat.
Exactly. If you don't mind being the last person to board and sitting in a middle seat, okay, and not having a choice of anything, and you're guaranteed never to change that seat, and you're willing to walk away if at the last minute you can't fly, that's the price to book. If you need more than that, if you want to sit together as a family, for example, okay, you're going to have to buy a higher priced, more inclusive fare. And maybe or maybe not get the car wash.
You know, you touch on business travelers earlier. If you have to travel and it's a day trip, you know, fly in the morning, fly out in the evening, all you need is a briefcase. It seems like you could take an advantage of a low fare like this.
Well, it is possible, but the chance of, again, you would take the payment, you'd pay up to get the equivalent of the car wash, which is a seat assignment. No business traveler wants to be that person in the middle seat, even with just a briefcase. And increasingly, day trips are dicey operations. I mean, just look at yesterday at O'Hare and Midway, where 1,000 flights were canceled. Very few people these days book first flight in, last flight back, because it's just not reliable anymore.
Interesting stuff. Thank you, Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, potentially market-moving talks are set this week by President Trump and the chairman of the Fed.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
President Trump spoke to the Economic Club of New York this morning. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, he'll testify in front of the Congressional Joint Economic Committee tomorrow. Let's talk about the possible impact on the markets. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver, is joining us, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, the president spoke this morning, as we just said. Did he say anything to move the needle at all?
Well, he certainly was positive on the economy, as I expected him to be. Lowest unemployment rate in 50 years. We've heard that before. Very strong stock market. He mentioned the Dow up 50% during his tenure. One of the important numbers he mentioned, and I don't think it's mentioned enough, is median household income. That's a economic term saying, in effect, half the household incomes are above that number and half below. That's up 5,000 during his tenure to a peak level of 64,000 in median household incomes. That's a good number It also is true that the wage gains have been the strongest at the lower and moderate income workers. So generally, the economic numbers were spectacular, and the president rightfully sung his praises on that issue. The one thing he got wrong was the Fed, and Cisco, I could talk about that forever.
Yeah, well, I mean, talk about that in light of the fact that we're going to hear from Jerome Powell.
Indeed. I'm expecting Powell to basically make the same remarks that he made at the end of October in his Fed policy decision. That, remember, was the third rate cut this year. He looked at a solid economy, strong labor market, but he was somewhat worried about trade. I would mention that one of the president's answers to a question did suggest that the administration is close to a phase one deal with China. That's not the best news in the world, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
And when it comes to those interest rates, obviously, that's what everyone is paying attention to. Everyone's sort of wanting to make sure they're going to stay pat through the election season. Often people are looking for really no real movement while in a campaigning.
That's an excellent question. I certainly think the Fed is on pause right now after those three rate cuts this year. The Fed chairman has said as much. He's happy, basically, with where the economy is right now. The Fed chairman, that is, as well as the president. And the Fed chairman's not listening to the president with regard to what he's supposed to be doing. But I think Powell's happy to keep rates right where they are. And you're right in alluding to the possibility that even in the election year next year, the Fed usually does not want to move rates around very much. So pause is the answer right now.
David Jones, always appreciate your insight. David is chairman of DMJ Advisors and author of the book Understanding Central Banking. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.